Hello and welcome to the Wrestling Arena. I'm your host, Paul Barrow, and on today's show, we'll be discussing the ever-changing world of professional wrestling and what it'll mean in the upcoming year. First of all, I'd like to apologise to anybody watching the live show a couple of weeks ago when I suffered a blackout during the middle of the stream, so the show just ended. That's been happening over the last couple of weeks with a weird amount of regularity, but seems to have stopped now. So I've decided to do this show, not as a live show, just as a precaution, but I obviously want to put something out, because I don't want you guys to think I've just disappeared. And this is going to be an interesting show, because a lot has happened in the intervening weeks. We've had Big Business, which was a big show for AEW. We've had various things happen in the WWE and their build-up to WrestleMania. I just think it's an interesting time in wrestling. We've had a lot of debuts, a lot of changes. It's all very weird. But first, I do want to discuss some news. This comes from Fightful Select, and it talks about the imminent departure from TNA of the Motor City Machine Guns. The TNA tapings tonight may have seen the end of an era. Fightful Select was able to confirm PW Insider's report that there was a send-off and some farewells at tonight's TNA tapings in Philadelphia. Chris Sabin and Alex Shelley's TNA deals are set to expire in about a week, with them slated to be free agents on April 1st. They're expected to have multiple suitors in free agency and, as of now, aren't expected back in TNA. However, we're told the door has been kept open. Shelley and Sabin have not responded to individual inquiries about their status. So, I think this is a big loss for TNA. Obviously, these guys have had their world titles. They've been multiple-time tag champs. They've been around forever. They're kind of icons of TNA wrestling. And I can only assume this comes from the fact that TNA no longer seem to be offering long-term contracts. They are willing to offer people pay-per-appearance deals, which is obviously not what a lot of people want. A lot of people, you know, people want that security. And Anthem, I think it's become pretty obvious that Anthem are only interested in TNA as a way to make cheap programming that will fill in some of their time slots on their TV channels, which is a shame, because at one point last year, when they changed the name to TNA, I honestly thought they were going to be getting back on their feet. But we hear that, you know, They made a play for CM Punk, and they made a play for Will Ospreay. And then the guy that was apparently behind that got fired. And it's just like, okay, if this is what it is, then why is anybody going to stick around with TNA? That being said, Matt Cardona has recently appeared for TNA again. And he said it was specifically because of the pay-per-appearance deals they were offering, because he does not want to be tied down. He is the quote-unquote king of the indies. And he the reason he left TNA before was because they were trying to offer him a contract. And he didn't want to sign it because he wanted to be able to go to GCW and any other place he wanted to go. So I suppose it has its ups and downs. But if you're going to lose people like the Motor City Machine Guns, and I can't see anyone with a big name who does want that security. I mean, Matt Cardona is a big name on the indies. He's one of the biggest names in the indies, the Deathmatch King, etc., etc. If you're not doing that whole let's work as hard as we can and go everywhere I want to and hustle and make my own... I mean, Matt Cardona basically has a toy figure company. He's running his Major Figures podcast thing is huge. I don't know if anybody remembers the Brawling Buddies, I think they were called. They were like WWE stuffed toys back in the 80s, and they were like, you could wrestle with them. They've got their own versions of those coming out. I think they're called the Bloody Buddies, and they're like got blood. And I know WWF tried to relaunch them as like smaller kind of things, but these kind of look like they were back in the 80s, which I think I had the... No, I didn't have one. My neighbour had one. My neighbour had the Ultimate Warrior. And they were pretty cool to mess about with, so I never understood why WWE didn't go and do the whole thing. But the fact that he's doing it as an independent guy, and he's like, I'm going to create an entire line. He's got a figure line, has, you know, independent guys aren't signed to a company. So if you want a figure of certain people, they've got them. So yeah, I understand him not wanting to get tied down to a company if he's got this whole enterprise going on. But I cannot see them maintaining anybody's, I don't want to say loyalty, because it's a weird word in pro wrestling. Loyalty is a very weird word. I can't see them maintaining anyone if it's just like pay-per-view appearance. If you want them, you've got to lock them down. Like MLW learned that lesson. Their contracts were terrible, but they did lock people in. The ECW couldn't compete contract-wise with WWE and WCW back in the day, and that's part of the reason a lot of their top talent, like Taz, left and stuff like that. You need to lock these people in unless you don't care, and that's unfortunately the feeling I get. It's just whatever, as long as we've got wrestling on and we can fill these 2 hours every week and it's cheap, it's all good. I do feel bad for Scott D'Amore, because I do think he would have been like, let's open the purse strings, let's try and get Will Ospreay, let's try and get CM Punk. And I think that's part of the reason he was gone, because he was probably making too much noise and being like, hey, we need to do this because we can't. They don't want to be a competitor to WWE. They don't want to be a competitor to AEW. They just want to fill in their time slot, which is fine. Like, there are plenty of little indies in the 90s and early 2000s that were like on public access and stuff like that, that were just like, we've got our time slot, let's fill it in. And if it's cheap enough for these guys to do, that's all right. And it's a place for people to work. But so's NWA, so's a lot of other places. I suppose TNA do have TV. I suppose that's the thing, isn't it? If you want to get yourself on some kind of television and get yourself some kind of televisual experience, TNA is still a place to go. But it has to be said that I think losing the Motor City Machine Guns, a great tag team, is going to be hard. I mean, whether or not they stay together, they've been going a while. I think AEW would be interested, because I think AEW is interested in anyone that pops up. I think anybody that has even a vague name is on the AEW radar instantly. Which is weird, because that's how TNA used to be. TNA used to be like that all the time. It'd be like, what's slightly off-brand name doing in the Impact Zone? But, yeah, Chris Sabin, Alex Shelley, no longer with TNA. I never thought I'd see the day. And speaking of something weird and, you know, unexpected, it's been interesting to note there's been about a producer for WWE Speed. Now, if you don't know what WWE Speed is, it's a show, should we say. I think the matches are somewhere around 8 minutes. And it takes place exclusively on Twitter. I think it debuts next year. And at the last SmackDown tapings, on March 22nd, they recorded a couple of matches, which being Cedric Alexander versus Odyssey Jones, and then Tyler Bate versus Angel Garza. The interesting thing, though, is that the producer for both matches was Pete Dunne. Now, Pete Dunne's been at WWE for a while. He's 30 years old, so he's still active. He's, you know, he's in a tag team with Tyler Bate, the New Catch Republic, a couple of local boys from my area. I saw them quite a lot when I was going to indie wrestling more frequently. It's very cool to see them on TV. It's interesting to see someone who's an active guy as a producer. That's usually a role reserved for retired wrestlers or just people that are, you know, full-time injured and they want something for them to do. The fact that they've given it to Pete Dunne shows tremendous confidence in the guy, to be honest. And it's cool, but it does make me go, like, I hope he's not looking to wrap it up too soon. He's only 30. Now, obviously, he's 30. He's been going a while, though. We don't know how banged up he is, whether he's got a nagging injury. And this tag run with Tyler, who I believe Tyler Bate beat him to become the first UK champion back when NXT UK was a thing. It's interesting to see that he's producing matches. Perhaps he's just very good at quick matches, and they're giving him a go to see if they can shift some responsibility away from retired wrestlers, because there aren't that many. I can't imagine there were that many more around now. The like backstage guys that are like you got. I mean, you've got Michael Hayes, who's always going to be around and stuff like that. But do you kind of want to lighten the workload? Although you've still got people like Jason Jordan and things like that. That you know, shame what happened to him, but he does seem to have a job for just you know for doing that kind of thing. Just I thought it was weird to get Pete Dunne on the side to do that kind of stuff. And then in one of the more shocking moments of the last week or so, we learnt that Shayna Baszler would be appearing for Bloodsport, which is a sort of mixed martial arts. So it's mixed martial arts style pro wrestling. It's part of the collective, the GCW collective, which is like a weekend package of shows. I think this is the 10th one. Now, Shayna Baszler is still a contracted WWE wrestler. So this is quite crazy because obviously Shayna Baszler, former MMA fighter, former decorated MMA fighter, she has not had anything to do. Really, I think her WWE career has been quite the disappointment since she was called up from NXT. She should have been doing way more. She was always passed over for Ronda, which is a shame because now Ronda's not working for the company. And judging from the quotes from her book, will never be working with the company. She said that it was misogynistic and, you know, it's a terrible company to work for. And she said, I don't need the money so I can put these people on blast. And according to several people in her book, she really goes hard on WWE and its culture. And that, you know, women didn't really get a chance until much closer to where she came in. But anyway, Shayna Baszler is still there, and it says that Shayna Baszler is appearing in Bloodsport, and they were talking to, speaking on the Under the Ring podcast, Josh Barnett. And it is Josh Barnett's Bloodsport. Credited his relationships with people in WWE for making Baszler's upcoming appearance a possibility. Barnett said, I guess the easiest way to describe it is just through my relationships with people there. That's really what it comes down to. And with anybody, when speaking of a promotion, you've always got to want it. If you're going to do anything outside of it, you want a certain level of trust and consideration given to you. And it's hard to let your toys out when there's so much money put into them and the product itself. In general, of course, we see cross-promotion happening out there in the world of wrestling, but it's a really big deal when you think about it, all the different things involved with it, and the values from the athletes that are going back and forth. But fortunately, through relationships I've cultivated over the years, something like having Shayna Baszler at GCW Bloodsport, it's a reality now. And I'm super happy and honoured to be able to do it. And I know that Shayna's going to do fantastic. I should know, I've been training her for her entire career. A previous report indicated the decision to have Baszler compete at Bloodsport was made by WWE Chief Content Officer Triple H. And it's been confirmed that Baszler will face off against TNA star Masha Slamovic at Bloodsport 10. Ronda Rousey has certainly not been mincing words in her autobiography, Our Fight, where she talks about Vince McMahon, Bruce Pritchard, and apparently a lot of other stuff. Now, the book isn't due out till the 4th of April, so I do not want to do a kind of expose on what's in this book until I've read the whole thing and I'm putting it into context. But a lot of let's put it this way, she's not kind against Vince McMahon. She's not kind against John Laurinaitis. She's quite kind to Triple H, apparently. And she is also very much against the way her career went in WWE. But as I say, I will probably do that once I've read the book. I'm quite interested in reading it now because it seems like she's gone, well, I don't need the money, so I'm just going to talk, which is always good, always fun. But I don't just want to give you a list of stuff out of context, or if it is out of context, I can at least, you know, give you a full list rather than giving you a couple of lines here, a couple of lines next week, and that kind of thing. But I will read the book. It's kind of shot up my list now. I'm currently reading Nikita Koloff's book, so I don't just read her wrestling autobiographies. It just so happens that there's a few coming out soon. We've got, right now I'm listening to Nikita Koloff's book. I'll get Ronda Rousey's book, and this week I think Becky Lynch's book is coming out. And while I don't expect a ton of expose stuff from one of the top people in the company, it's going to be quite interesting to hear about her early career, where she quit for a time, and why she quit. So I will get back to you with reviews on that at the time. I'll give a proper review of Ronda's book, and I'll give you a proper list of, like, here's all the stuff she says, and whether or not you can believe it, or whether it just comes across as sour grapes. So I'll be giving that the proper kind of looking it deserves, rather than just giving you a couple of lines here and there. And finally, MLW are looking to bring in Mauro Ranallo. I can never say the guy's name right. Mamma Mia, Mauro Ranallo could be heading back to pro wrestling. The long-time combat sports and pro wrestling commentator has been absent from the pro wrestling scene for quite a while, but that could be about to change. Fightful Select has learnt that MLW has been in talks with Ranallo about possibly appearing for the MLW brand. There isn't a done deal, but there is interest on MLW's side. MLW owner Court Bauer and Amaro have worked together on Strikeforce projects in the past. Ranallo was a member of the SmackDown Announce team between 2016 and 17 before moving on to NXT. He left WWE in 2020 and since then has primarily continued to call combat sport events. In 2021, he called the main event of Impact Rebellion. Now, I know I just said the guy's name wrong about 13 times in every different permutation you can do. Apologies for that. It's just one of those names I can never wrap my tongue around. I'm sure if I met the guy or knew the guy and was talking to him every day, I'd figure it out. But I always really liked this guy's commentary. Granted, by the end, he did kind of turn into a bit of a parody of himself. But the fact he was run off by, like, you know, incessant heckling and bullying from JBL and stuff like that is terrible, because he suffers from anxiety. And I think it was an ESPN documentary. There was a documentary about it somewhere, and you could see he's like, I'm having a good day today, and then on a bad day, it was like a totally different person. I felt so bad for the guy, especially knowing the culture in WWE, where, you know, you had this whole, like, oh, you got to be a man and all this kind of other stuff, and you can't show your feelings, and to think that he got driven out of a job he was really good at. I always felt pretty bad for the guy. I hope MLW do get him. I hope that, because that would improve their product greatly. They do seem to run on a shoestring budget, on a kind of rough budget, but, you know, they're another place the Motor City Machine Guns could pop up, and if the Motor City Machine Guns want to do the float around different companies thing, they go to P of A. But yeah, maybe they get him, maybe they don't. But it's cool that he's back in the world of wrestling if he does get there. Now we're going to get onto this topic that I want to talk about for the week, which is the fact that wrestling seems to be of all change at the moment. Now, there have been two major changes in the big companies as far as I can see. The first is with the WWE. Now, on SmackDown, we got a bit of a showdown between Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes. And it was pretty cool. It was an on-the-mic showdown. And it ended with a showdown between the Bloodline and Cody and his friends. Pretty cool. But what I noticed is that there was a lot less heat than I expected. I expected a lot more tension from the crowd, from the segment, a lot more anger, a lot more sort of, well, heat. I know it's a bad way of putting things, and I'm trying to explain what heat is, but I've noticed that the heat lately has been with The Rock. The match I want to see is Cody versus The Rock, which is quite disastrous because you don't give Roman this massive, long title reign and make it so that the next person that beats him is going to be the man, and hopefully that's Cody, as it should have been last year. I will never, ever say they shouldn't have ended it last year. But now, it's just kind of, it feels, or at least that one promo did, it felt like they were going through the motions. I don't feel that Roman has all the heat. I feel that Roman is playing subservient to The Rock, which is a bit of a problem, because I don't think The Rock is sticking around after Mania. I think it's by design. I think they're still trying to set up Rock versus Roman, as they should. It'll be a good match, and people will want to see it once this Cody situation has been resolved. But I don't know. It just feels like the heat there was for Rock versus Roman... Sorry, the heat there was for Cody versus Roman is not what it once was. It's certainly not what it was last year. And I've got no doubt that, you know, in a week or so, they'll have pumped it back up. But The Rock's on a different level. He's getting to cut longer promos. He's cutting big, massive promos on social media which do not follow the PG guidelines of WWE, for which he's apparently getting some backstage heat for, although there are conflicting reports on that. And obviously, he doesn't have to follow the rules. He is a member of the board for TKO. So, in a way, what they're going to do, they can discipline him, they can fine him. But I don't think he's going to be in too much trouble. The problem comes when that isn't the main event of WrestleMania. Cody versus The Rock is not the main event of WrestleMania. Roman versus Cody is the main event. And that needs to be the focus. That desperately needs to be the focus. Unless you're setting up The Rock to be Cody's first opponent after he wins. But I don't think you are. I think he's setting up for a new movie. And I expect him back more often because, you know, as I said, he is a board member. I expect him back more often, but he is still going to be in Hollywood. He isn't just going to disappear and become a wrestler again. And it worries me that you had all this heat, all this time, all this presentation put into Roman, and it's been sort of supplanted by a better promo in The Rock, more intensity from The Rock, and... It's a shame because, like I said, they've put all that work in. All those people lost to Roman to make him the man, the guy to beat. And now I'm kind of looking past him to The Rock. I'm looking past him to, well, let's see what happens when The Rock gets involved in this. So let's see what happens. And that's not what you want. You still need, the Rock needs to be putting Roman over like anything. And I get why they're not. As I said, they're trying to build up to that singles match between the two of them. But everything, the final boss nickname is, you know, it's the final, it's the last, the greatest, the toughest, the most difficult. He is setting himself up as better than Roman, even if Roman isn't noticing it, or that kind of thing. It's just, it's very strange because I understand it. I just think it's a bad choice for right now. They could easily kick that up, like, whenever Rock comes back, they could kick it up. Oh, by the way, I'm actually the best. Right now, The Rock needed to be subservient to Roman. And, you know, fair play to him for pivoting away from Rock versus Roman as the main event and pivoting and putting Cody where he deserved to be and realising that that was going to be an uphill struggle and putting that right, but they're still not quite getting it exactly where it needs to be. And I understand, man. You don't want to make The Rock seem like a non-issue or not a big deal. But as I said, he's not the main event of Mania. If I was doing this, I would put the tag match as the opener to night one of Mania. Because you get to put it at the opener. You get to do the big tag match. Everyone goes crazy. You got the fresh crowd. You then get to put Bayley at the end of night one, where she deserves to be. She's won the Royal Rumble. She deserves to be the main event of one of the nights of WrestleMania. Not as big a deal as it used to be when there was one night. But she's kind of been downplayed. That entire situation has been downplayed. It sucks for her because she's the only one of the horsewomen to have not main evented a WrestleMania. And I think you could still put her there and people will be happy. And I think if you kick off with that Cody and Seth versus the Bloodline tag match for night one, and you can use the excuse of, oh, we want to rest ourselves up. We want to have the most energy. We want to be able to concoct our plans for tribal warfare or whatever it was called. I can't remember. We want to have everything and we want to make sure that we've put everything in place. And that's not going to make them look small time. They did it a few years ago when Seth took on Roman at the opener. And that was cool. I mean, you could. I think you could do that again. I honestly do. And I think it wouldn't damage anyone's star power. It'd be a big moment to kick off Mania. It would make the crowd go molten hot from the beginning. You wouldn't have a worn-out crowd at the end of the night. I think it makes sense. And the women's match at the end of the night, you know, as I said, Bayley deserves that main event spot. But I do think it's changed. The aspects have changed. You know, The Rock is now the one I want to see against Cody. And not that I'm saying they need to change the main event of Mania, but when I'm looking past Roman Reigns of all people, who's been put over more than anyone else and has had this historically long title reign, you know, despite never defending the bloody thing and it being a bit silly because of that, then I don't understand why or where they think that putting on these big promo things with The Rock and really kind of having Roman just kind of stand there is making Roman look good. It's not. He needs to be the focus. He needs to be the head of the table, if you will. And I'm a bit concerned. I'm sure everything will still be good. It's not like it's going to be a disaster. It just seems a bit of a shame when everyone's put all the work in. And then on the other side of the tracks with AEW, we've had three major, major debuts in Mercedes Moné, Kazuchika Okada, and Will Ospreay. Now, I have to say, I wasn't all that impressed with the debut of Mercedes Moné, at least not with her interview, and that's for one real reason only. She had to do the thing she always does whenever she's got a big interview, and she had to mention Eddie Guerrero. And I get it, like, Eddie Guerrero was your big influence, your big inspiration. But, like, you don't need to do that anymore. One, people that know, and you're a huge star. But it always seems to me like you're trying to sort of glom off the sympathy for Eddie Guerrero. When I used to go to see independent wrestling in the UK and Juventud Guerrero, would come out for a match. This happened about three or four different promotions, and we saw them in the space of about 2 months. And every match he'd come out to, it became comical. He'd just come out, oh, this match I'm dedicating to my good friend Eddie Guerrero. Pop. And it felt like every time he did it, the pop got less, because it just feels gross. And I'm not saying that's what Mercedes is doing, but, like, you don't need to mention the guy. You do some of his moves. You do some of his mannerisms. It's cool. But constantly mentioning, oh, yes, Eddie Guerrero, like, and she doesn't always do it. Don't get me wrong. It's not in every interview. It just feels like every time she has a big moment, a big thing, it gets mentioned. And it's weird to me. It's not like the gross kind of, like, Eddie's not up there, he's down there thing that after he died with Randy Orton to Rey Mysterio. It's not like she's not being disrespectful. It just feels very amateur. If this was like a nobody doing this, you'd be like, okay, yeah, cool. But she's one of the biggest female stars going. She's certainly the biggest female star AEW have at the moment. And, you know, I'm happy to see her. I'm happy she's there. I'm happy she's getting to do something she wants to do. Perhaps it's just a personal thing with me. It just feels a bit gross. Then we've got Kazuchika Okada, who is currently doing a heel gimmick with the Young Bucks. and I wasn't sure how I was going to kind of take to him as a TV wrestler, because I've only ever really seen him on big New Japan shows like the January 4th shows. I mean, I've seen him on other pay-per-views like Forbidden Doors, and there have been other New Japan shows I've watched, but his matches have always been like 30, 40 minutes to me, and I always get the, like, I always get the worry that it's going to end up like Nakamura, where they just don't really get to make that transition onto TV as a TV wrestler. And I've been pleasantly surprised with what I've seen so far. He's managed to, like, he emotes more than I've seen him emote before. And of course, he did do that terrible work with TNA where they gave him that Green Hornet gimmick, which is the reason that the TNA and New Japan deal fell through, because they were like, we want this guy to be one of our top stars and you're giving him a terrible gimmick and having him be beaten up every week. Like, can you just not, can you not do that? So I was surprised. I guess I shouldn't be surprised that he knows what he's doing on TV, but he's playing a really good, arrogant bully, and his TV stuff has been really good. His facial work's been it's been a pleasant surprise. I thought he was going to be good, but I thought he was going to be like, oh, you've basically got to wait till pay-per-view to see the best of him so you can get like 40 minutes in, because they're not going to give him 40 minutes every week. But I've been impressed. I've been very impressed. Bit concerned that they've given him the Continental belt, because I don't see the point in it. I thought it was going to stay as a Triple Crown thing, and giving him what is effectively a lower mid-card belt in a company that has too many belts is a bit of a letdown. Not that I should say he should walk in and become the AEW World Champion. Just, it seems weird. Now, giving him something to hang over himself is a good idea. So I guess this was kind of it, wasn't it? Because they didn't want to give him the TNT belt, because Adam Copeland's just won that from Christian in a really good street fight. But it was very strange. But yeah, I think Okada's doing okay. I think Okada is pleasantly surprising me. Although I think I'd lowered my expectations too low, and now I'm just kind of like, oh, cool. You're even making the Young Bucks somewhat palatable, because they've got something to focus on when they are being cocky idiots, because, you know, they've got the best wrestler in the world behind them. And then, speaking of the best wrestler in the world, we got Will Ospreay, a man I did not expect to be this over. I knew that the AEW audience would obviously gravitate towards him. He's that kind of worker. But what I didn't expect is how good he is on the microphone, how expressive he is, how, you know, impressive he's been as a kind of a jolly, cheeky chappy. Of course, the only thing we've got to really worry about is the typical AEW thing doesn't happen, where they get so over that they just get left, and people, they expect them to still be as over when they get picked back up. I mean, Wardlow seems to be back in the role of lackey that he fought so hard to get out of under MJF, but hopefully, because I'm assuming they're paying Will Ospreay a great deal of money, that they're not going to do that with this guy, that they're going to treat him as the top guy, because he does seem like he is at the moment, which is really weird, the top guy in AEW. People have popped for him. He's got a great match coming up at their pay-per-view with Bryan Danielson. It really does seem like it's going to be a really impressive run for him, which I kind of wasn't expecting. And I don't think he's bringing in many new lapsed fans or WWE fans. He's not that kind of worker, but he is going to be keeping the AEW guys, their most hardcore fan base, happy. And I think that's important, because there was a time that you know, after the Punk, the Brawl Out situation and Punk getting fired, that people were kind of down on AEW, and I've been down on them recently for their lack of storytelling and But I guess time will tell as to whether or not storytelling can catch up, because they've definitely got the talent. They've always had the talent to keep going with things, to keep things interesting in-ring. It's just always been the storylines around it have been either too long or too melodramatic. Or, I mean, look at it. You've got Swerve Strickland. You've got Will Ospreay. You've got flipping Hangman, Adam Page, if you rate the guy. You've got a lot of top-name talent. You've got, and I might look too much, really. You've got Adam Copeland, Christian. You've got a nice mix of everything. I mean, Wembley this year is going to be incredible. It's going to be one hell of an atmosphere, which I wasn't sure about saying a couple of weeks back. I was like, oh, I mean, I've got tickets to Wembley, but you never know what's going to happen, do you? But it's really looking like it's going to be cool. We've got a long road to go before then, though. And with WWE hot and AEW kind of heating up, we could end up in a situation where we're back at the kind of, I don't want to say the Monday Night Wars era, where they're going to go head to head, but you might have a situation where both companies are hot, they're running hot, they're having a good product on, which will be nice, it'd be a good thing to do, to be able to kind of sit there and talk about both sides and not be like, oh, well, this was terrible, wasn't it, and that was terrible, and oh, forget about this. I mean, you know, AEW has its problems, as WWE does. WWE, I think, is too, as it has been for a while, it's too focused on its top program. It's setting other things up for Mania, but they're not getting as much interest and as much time put into them as the top program. And I guess that's kind of the point of the top program. But on the AEW side, you've got the Chris Jericho situation where he's once again sort of stuck himself with an over mid-card act and thinks that losing to them is putting them over. And in a certain aspect, I guess it is. It's just that they never seem to be better off after the feud. I mean, Sammy Guevara just kept being his lapdog and kept being his lackey, and that just has never ended from the inner circle to now. You've got guys like Action Andretti, who he lost to and then nothing happened. And I guess that's not really Jericho's fault. That needs to be followed up on. And then you have guys like Ricky Starks, who got into a Jericho feud and were like, oh, this is pretty interesting. And they beat Jericho, and then the feud went on for another, like, 20 years, or I think it was about a month and a half or whatever. It was too long. You need to get them over, put them over strong, and stop. You can't do this even, Steven. Well, I've got to get my win back, because then you negate losing to them in the first place. It's frustrating, because, like, Jericho's capable of some good stuff, but every time he appears on TV at the moment, I'm just kind of, I don't dislike him. He just needs to go away for a little bit and make me miss him. I mean, I don't know. There's a lot of hate online for the guy, and I kind of get it, but it's just kind of like, well, what do you want? He is seemingly willing to lose to these people, but is he being smart about it and only losing when he knows it's not really going to affect him? So right now it's the turn of Hook, and it's weird because Hook's already had some like good matches with people that you'd think he was already somewhat of a star. I mean, he's the FTW champion. Not that that really means anything, but he's had a good match against Samoa Joe. Samoa Joe made him look about as good as he was going to look in the amount of time they got. So this team with Jericho, I get the impression that people think it's supposed to be a step up, but to me, you just have to keep featuring Hook anyway. Hook was going to get over no matter what. Hook has a sort of presence. He's very basic, but he does all right. He's not amazing, but I don't think teaming with Jericho is going to get him any more over than that. Of course, it's going to end up with a match. I mean, they had a match recently, and it was all right. But to be fair, Jericho got thrown around a fair bit. But I just don't know. It's a weird one. I just want Jericho to go away for a bit, a couple of months, and let me mix him or not mix him. Heal up, come back and do something different. But so far, AEW are going to do pretty well off these new signings, I think. But they're going to run into the problem they always run into. Sooner or later, the bloom is going to come off the rose with these guys. They're just going to be ordinary guys in the roster, even if they're top guys. And you're going to have to create a storyline with them, and that's where they kind of fall apart, at least for me. I mean, I will praise the Okada story right now, where he's just being a bully. That's pretty good, but again, you've put him with a nothing title, and I get you wanting to have something to like boast about. That's pretty cool. But if you like me boasting about, you know, oh, I've got a bus pass here, it cost me £30, I would have probably had him come out and win the TNT title pretty quick and then just become dominant with it and try and rehab that belt. I mean, not that Christian hasn't done a great job at that anyway. Christian's done a really good job of making the TNT belt at least interesting, and Christian's a great character. But when it comes to wrestling, if you wanted to make it a prestigious kind of wrestling title, I just think the Continental belt is a little crazy, because I honestly thought it was just going to be part of this Triple Crown. It's a very weird thing to have done, just split that up already. And then if we just go back to WWE for a moment and, you know, weird things they're doing. Giving Sami Zayn the Intercontinental Championship shot is a little weird when he's already been Intercontinental Champion so many times. And he, in my opinion, he should still be every now and then attempting the world title or the equivalent of the world title. To put him back in the IC picture is a bit of a downgrade for him, especially when he got so over as part of the Bloodline. I think giving it to Gable would be a much better thing, as Gable has, for some reason, never had a singles championship. He was ready. They had the whole thing where his kid cried. Best they could make it into a three-way, I guess, but I feel bad for Sammy because, like, he's done nothing wrong, but the crowd are going to resent him for taking what they're going to see as Gable's spot. It's all part of WrestleMania season, I know, and I can only hope they give Sammy something to do after Mania that moves him up the card where he should be in that world title spot or that WWE title spot, because he deserves it. Of course, this is always a good problem to have, because if you've got people you always want to put in, always want to have a go with, obviously, as soon as Gunther's lost the Intercontinental Championship, they should also be moving him up. So I imagine he's going to be Cody's first opponent. And that's kind of the thing. WWE have got a lot of star power at the moment. They've got, you know, Punk, although he's injured, he's probably coming back. Drew, if they manage to keep him, should be up somewhere at the card. Seth is obviously somewhere at the card. Cody needs to be somewhere at the card. They've got a lot of people that should be going for those world titles. So keeping everyone happy is always going to be a problem. And I think that's the downside of having changed your plans at WrestleMania, because I think that is going to teach fans that if they complain enough, you're going to change your plans. And we've already seen that with, like, Liv Morgan and the Women's Championship. People kicked up a fuss about that online, and maybe they're going to think if they keep doing that, they're going to get somewhere, and it's going to cause possibly some resentment. I guess we'll see. And that's going to be it for me for now. I'm sorry I haven't been available lately. Like I said, my flat's been a bit weird. I keep having random power cuts. It seems to have settled down for now. I can only imagine one of the power boxes in my local area was damaged or something, and they've just got around to fixing it. But I was getting really weird power cuts, which was funny because I'd get a text message saying, "We understand that there's no power in your area." And then the power would come back on in about 3 or 4 hours. And then about 2 hours after that, I'd get a text message going, "Oh, congratulations, you've got power again." I was like, well, I know that now. But it's amazing what happens when I get no power. And it's like, I've got no lights, so I can't read. I've got no internet, so I can't watch Netflix or watch TV or anything. It really makes you think how much we rely on the internet, especially for our entertainment. So anyway, I apologise for not being around, but I'll be back soon, and I'll hopefully be back doing live shows very, very soon. Looking forward to Mania, looking forward to seeing how everything goes there. That's obviously the big show coming up, and I don't mean Paul White. I will obviously be back reviewing that and previewing that and all that kind of thing. I will do my best to get back into the swing of live shows, and I will see you next time.